This is Pure Decking, show number 542 for Thursday, November the 9th, 2004. This is a show about stuff that interests me, like information security, rigging the game, and hoping I'm really wrong about the state of where things are going. Tonight, we have a madman. What's up, madman?
Nothing much. Drinking, planning to rule the world, drinking some more.
Well, hurry it up on your plans for world domination, because the current crop of idiots is not doing a good job. And we have an Are You. What's up, Are You?
I'm with you, Morps. Get the show on the road, madman. Fucking slacking off.
I mean, why haven't you started yet? What are you missing? Let's see if we can crowdsource this shit to have a global...
Mainly, I'm lazy. But I would be a wonderful theocratic fascist.
You couldn't fuck it up any harder than the ones that are doing it now.
Theocratic fascist. That's an interesting choice of a political system.
Don't worry, you'll be among the last sent to the gas chambers. My friends.
It's a comforting fucking thought.
Hey, I hate everyone equally.
Wait a minute.
I hate everyone. I just hate some people less than others.
Bullshit. We all know everyone who actually, if you were in that position of power, everyone who actually knew you personally would be in first in line in the gas chamber. You wouldn't risk somebody who knew you being around.
But then who would I play Dungeons and Dragons with?
I've ran enough D&D and vampire games for you. I know how your mind works in these scenarios. You'd begin offing everyone who knew anything personal about you immediately. It's like, why? Because they could be coerced into being into working against me. We don't want to risk that. Besides, I hear Wizards of the Coast is working on getting an AI to run D&D games. So,
sounds terrible. A politically correct AI Dungeons and Dragons
game.
Oh,
dude, no! If you haven't looked at what Modern Blizzard is doing. They bought into the whole political correct PC shit hard.
Yeah, I know, man. I couldn't even imagine doing a tabletop game with friends and having to keep it like PC.
Oh, did I tell you about that book on GMing that I decided, you know, that I bought just out of curiosity to read? And the first chapter was about making sure it was a safe space at your table, and you know how you're supposed to have a mission statement about how you won't tolerate this bullshit. And it's just like, why are you telling other people running their games what they must do? Because yes, it's a book on Dungeon Master advice, but that has nothing to do with the game.
I mean, if you're rocking up to a local shop or something like that, you know, don't be fucking screaming stupid shit as you cast spells. But if you're around the table with friends, yeah, get creative with the language.
Oh, if I ever read a mission statement, whatever character sheet I had with me would immediately be torn up, because I'd be playing one of the few times I play a human. Because those suckers are evil and scary. We're going to have slaves that are eventually going to be turned into my zombie army.
I can support that, madman.
I don't know. The last human I played in a game wasn't that bad.
Yeah, but whenever you play humans, you don't make them evil. Every human I have ever played has been evil. Because they are.
He was just seriously amoral.
Mine are evil, and they intend to get immortality through becoming a lich.
Well, I don't play evil characters in games anymore because of the one time I did. And we don't do that anymore. That was scary. Okay. Speaking of things being evil and scary, you want to get into the first article I have for tonight?
What do we have?
EFF, Article 45. Well, okay, yeah, I threw the link in. This is from the EFF, EFF.org. Article 45 will roll back web security by 12 years. The EU is poised to pass a sleepy new regulation, EIDAS 2.0. Buried deep in the text is Article 45, which returns us to the dark ages of 2011 when certificate authorities could collaborate with governments to spy on encrypted traffic and get away with it. Article 45 forbids browsers from enforcing modern security requirements on certain ECAs, certificate authorities, without the approval of an EU member government. That alone should be enough. But let's keep going because there's a whole, you know, thing here. Yeah, Article 45 forbids browsers from enforcing modern security requirements on certain certificate authorities without the approval of an EU member government. Which certificate authorities? Specifically the CAs that were appointed by the government, which in some cases will be owned or operated by that selfsame government. This means that cryptographic keys under one government's control could be used to intercept HTTPS communication throughout the EU and beyond. So, I guess to explain here, every operating system, every web browser, a lot of network software stacks, and if you're writing code, you'll usually have, sometimes the language runtimes will have their own certificate stacks, but they will all have a set of certificate authorities built into them that they trust as part of supporting SSL/TLS. These have to be maintained. These have to, you know, this is one of the updates you get on a fairly routine basis for any Windows, Linux, Mac. We'll be just keeping the CAs up to date. And the way these work, if you're not familiar with certificate authorities, anytime you try to make a secure TLS connection to a web server, I mean, you can pull it up in your browser. You can see the certificates. So if you, you know, if you're on Firefox right now, you click the little lock next to your URL, you hit the little arrow on secure connection and hit more information, it'll show you the certificate. So I can see right here, star.eff.org is registered through Let's Encrypt. So in this case, the certificate authority is Let's Encrypt because they're the ones who issue the certificate. And they're the ones that have a certificate built into, in this case, Firefox, saying, hey, any certificates issued by this particular key, signed with this private key, they come from us, you can trust them because they come from that CA. What the EU is doing is they're putting a provision in there that browsers have to, you know, put government certificates in them. And what that lets a website do, especially if you have control, or what lets an ISP do, especially if you have control over the network, is it allows you to route traffic through a SSL-enabled proxy. Because the way those usually work is you make a secure connection from your machine to the proxy, the middleman. Then the middleman makes another secure connection from the proxy to the website you're trying to get to. Now, this all happens in the background. It doesn't really slow it down. I mean, I guess it does if you're measuring milliseconds, but, you know the ping difference is negligible, especially. This is what a lot of corporate networks will do. So they'll actually install a set of certificates that they've generated in-house specifically for doing this on every workstation. And this is how they can monitor what websites you're going to on a corporate network so they can make sure you're not going to things that you shouldn't be on a work device. Because if you're on a work network with work devices, they get the right to see what all you're doing in there. Yeah, I mean, you can make privacy arguments, but bullshit, it's their equipment, it's their network. You know, you kind of assume that. This is how you do it. There's two tunnels in play. So by requiring browsers to trust government certificate authorities out of the box, it means that those governments could intercept your TLS SSL traffic, your encrypted traffic, web browser traffic, and decrypt it, either by setting up that tunnel or by just straight up having the keys. So it's a little bit more involved than just, oh, they have a CA, they can, you know, any CA can immediately decrypt your traffic. But it's one of the hardest steps in setting that kind of monitoring up is having the certificates installed on a machine. Did I explain that well enough, or did I just make it a mess?
Seemed good to me.
Okay.
You explained it well enough.
Okay. I never know when to stop, so it's like... Anyways, yeah, this is a catastrophe for the privacy of everyone who uses the internet, but particularly those who use the internet in the EU. Browser makers have not announced their plans yet, but it seems inevitable they will have to create two versions of their software. One for the EU with security checks removed, and another for the rest of the world with the checks intact. We've been down this road before when export controls on cryptography meant browsers were released in two versions, strong crypto for US and weak for everybody else. It was fundamentally inequitable situation and the knock-on effect set back web security by decades. The current text of Article 45 requires that browsers trust CAs appointed by governments and prohibits browsers from enforcing any security requirements on those CAs beyond what is approved by ETSI. In other words, it sets an upper bar on how much security browsers can require of CAs rather than setting a low bar. That, in turn, limits how vigorously browsers can compete with each other on improving security for their users. The upper bar on security may even ban browsers from enforcing certificate transparency, an IETF technical standard that ensures a CA's issuing history can be examined by the public in order to detect malfeasance. Banning CT enforcement makes it much more likely for government spying to go undetected. So why is this such a big deal? The role of a CA is to bootstrap encrypted HTTPS communication with websites by issuing certificates. The CA's core responsibility is to match website names with customers so that the operator of a website can get a valid certificate for that website, but nobody else can. If someone else gets a certificate for that website, they can use it to intercept... Okay, that's not quite right. They can use it to intercept encrypted communications, meaning they can read private information like emails. That is not exactly correct. What they can do is they can proxy that traffic and intercept it. Or if they can register a certificate for a different website, they could theoretically play games on the server side by making clone websites that are hard to detect. But again, you've got to insert yourself in that network traffic somehow, either by, you know, changing what hosting they're going to or any number of other ways to do it. But... anyways, we know HTTPS encryption is a barrier to government spying because of the NSA's famous, quote, SSL added and removed here, unquote, note. We also know that misissued certificates have been used to spy on traffic in the past. For example, in 2011, DigiNotar was hacked and the resulting certificates used to intercept emails for people in Iran. 2015, CNNIC issued an intermediate certificate used in intercepting traffic to a variety of websites. Each CA was subsequently distrusted. Distrusting a CA is just one end of a spectrum of technical innovations browsers can take to improve the security of their users. They get into the removal of some of the different hashing algorithms, and it goes on. But the problem here is that by regulation, they're demanding browsers include government CAs and that they are not allowed to require those CAs to meet a higher standard of certificate transparency using the latest hashing algorithms and so forth. And they're not allowed to distrust them. So if one of these CAs gets hacked or just behaves badly, and the browser just distrusts that CA, they can't ship in the EU. Now, that said, once the software is on the end user machine, you can go into your own certificate store and remove certificates that you don't want to trust. So I imagine you'll start seeing fairly quickly little scripts to run to go in and distrust certain CAs if we know they're bad actors and the browsers by regulation aren't allowed to remove them. The end user could do it with a script. Now, they may go after the people releasing scripts for that, but I think you'll start seeing that, you know, sort of like the people who put out the tools to disable telemetry in various operating systems. So, but this is fucky. I mean, actually, there's a good analogy for this, and that's the seatbelt regulations in the United States. Why haven't we seen better seatbelts in the last 25, 30 years? Because the government sets what a seatbelt is, and every car must have one, and you are not allowed to deviate from that design. You can't improve upon it because you're not allowed to deviate from that design.
And deviate, it just opens you up to
prosecution.
Legal issues that you wouldn't have if you didn't deviate.
So most,
that's why 5-point harnesses are race car things, not passenger car things.
Well, right, but it's the same thing where you've got a safety feature of the browser being regulated by the EU, demanding a lower standard than what you could actually accomplish that with what's out there right now. So,
the EU one's slightly worse than the seatbelt one because the seatbelt, it isn't demanded that you get the lower standard, but the lower standard's being predicted. I could still put a 5-point harness in a car. I'm just opening myself up to potential problems. But with what you're reading on this EU, if they put the better encryption in, they are in violation. So yeah, it's the EU's much worse on this.
Yeah. Okay. Thank you. Yeah, that's better than the way I put it, but yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. You're on. You're spot on.
But here's the problem with the regulation. I'm trying to think, is there a way they could try to accomplish what they're doing without making the encryption weaker? And the answer is, of course, no, because they're literally asking for a backdoor.
Yeah.
That's what they're asking for. And encryption doesn't work if it's not encrypted.
Well, so modern encryption is, it's not that it's impossible to break, but it's incredibly impractical to try to crack the encryption itself. So you try to crack the key. This is where shit like rainbow tables or using GPUs to process hashes and things like that comes in. So even the older versions of, now SSL v3 had problems, but even the older versions of TLS were relatively secure, right? I mean, you still want to be on at least 1.2 if you're running a website, if not on 1.3, but 1.1 and 1.0 weren't like going to get you hacked right away if you were running it, but you really should be on the latest standard. But what they're requiring is locking it in place and saying you're not allowed to do anything but this for these government CAs. And that's a problem because, one, you're not allowed to remove the government CAs, and if they misbehave, you have no recourse. Right now, and by the way, that's the whole point of a CA, is it's a certificate authority. It is supposed to be a trusted entity for accurately providing certificates to do HTTPS encryption, to do these kinds of trusted. Because, I mean, frankly, anybody can set up a certificate authority and run it on their local network, just it won't be trusted anywhere else you use it. You'll get browser errors saying that the certificate's not trusted or it's a self-sign. It's almost, you usually get that self-sign error because a root CA is certificate is almost always a self-signed certificate. Sometimes not if they've got an odd chain going on, but usually it's a self-sign, so that's the error you'll get. But you can install that root CA that you generate yourself into your own machines, and they'll trust it. This, I mean, that's what I was describing, what companies do. That's what they do. That's how they do it. You know, a lot of networking gear that offers the SSL inspection, that's what they're doing. You will have to manage certificates on that device. You will have to generate a self-signed certificate and install it across your workstations so that your users don't get SSL errors. And even then, you'll have websites that you'll have to whitelist because for one reason or another, they won't work with the SSL inspection. So
you're also making what is already a large target and a larger target. As if I could get the government keys, I know I'm going to be getting to everything that they don't, that individuals don't want me in.
But if I, by law, have to keep certain certificate authorities in the store, I now have no recourse to ensure that those entities behave in a trusted manner. So I'm going to pick on DigiCert because that's a big one that a lot of companies use. If DigiCert was found out tomorrow to have been keeping extra copies of all the private keys, re-signing everything, and then selling that information to governments, you could, one, go remove the cert yourself for DigiCert right now. You could just go into your machine and do it if you knew where the panels were, and they're not that hard. You just, they're not the most obvious things to get to. Or two, there would be an update from a lot of projects, you know, very quickly, or at least in the next, you know, like the Linux packages would probably get updated that day. You'd probably see Firefox and Chrome updates fairly quickly to distrust it. And, you know, the Windows updates would probably be in the next cycle to distrust a misbehaving certificate authority, right? Well, if I can't remove them and mark their certificates as distrusted, I have no, the larger technology population has no means of enforcement of good behavior on top of the CAs, which means those CAs, it's now meaningless. You have no guarantee of trust because they don't have to behave themselves because by law you can't remove them from the browser. So I don't know that I explained that clearly, but there it is.
I wonder if there's a competing technology that people could move to.
To what, to replace certificate authorities?
Yeah, but I with what they do, I don't think there is.
I'm not aware of a replacement for TLS. Now, there's nothing to stop you from putting out your own CA revocation list and not using the ones that come with the browser and the operating systems, which is, you know, again, the prediction I have is that you'll have a script. Somebody will maintain scripts on GitHub. You'll just run them, and they'll just go distrust those certs as just part of your basics. You know, your clean setup you do on any new machine, right? You almost, this day and age, you almost, it used to just be you wipe the machine out and install the operating system clean to get rid of all the crapware. Now the operating system comes with so much crapware, at least with Windows, you have to go get tools to turn off the telemetry and uninstall the bullshit and turn off all the extra services and the crap you don't need. And so this will just be another step in that process, is okay, and go take out all the government CAs. So,
and then from now on, every time that there's an update, you have to go through and fix the CAs.
Or, you know, there'll be there are packages, at least for Linux, where you could get a different set of CAs to put in them than the stock ones that come with the OS. Because that's just going to be, you know, Ubuntu will maintain a set, and they'll most likely just grab the open ones from libssl. But there's, you know, there are forks of SSL. It's the same protocol, but it's different maintainers. So you might be able to get a different CA list that way. I guess this comes back to the usual refrain, learn Linux. So
I'm not sure how well that would work, because depending on the project, they may actually be forcing the projects to comply.
Yeah, well,
at least on the larger ones.
If they want to be available in the EU, yeah. So, it's going to be a pain in the butt if you care about such things.
Everyone should care about their checking account and their health information, and this affects both.
You would think. But I've had very serious conversations with people at work who, well, I'll tell you a story off air because this one's happening right now and I don't want to advertise it. So it's just like, it's like, you did what? It's like, after all the bullshit, you did what? Anyways, next story.
Next story.
Next story is from the Register. Sard sent me this one. It's been several places now because, you know, of course, it's got the nice sensationalist headline. A man in his 40s was crushed to death by a robot at a produce sorting facility in South Korea Tuesday after the machine apparently mistook him for a box of vegetables. According to Korean media, the technician was diagnosing a problem with the robot's sensor package at the Dongguan-Suwon, I don't know, export agricultural complex ahead of a planned test run of the equipment Wednesday. While the man was checking to see whether the sensor electronics were working properly, the robot reportedly took hold of him using its arms and tongs, crushing his face and chest. Officials believe the system misidentified the man as a box of food and tried to lift him up. The victim was taken to the hospital, where he died as a result of his injuries. So, yeah, the robot literally crushed him to death. It says, you know, the reporter, this says the thing grabbed him. So... I've changed soundboards. I don't have the Terminator hit handy, so just imagine it. The South Gyeongsang Province plant has been using this robot to move food packages onto pallets for about 5 years, and has come in extra handy when there's been a shortage of manpower, the article's told. The Korean language Yonnap news agency report, through a machine translation, talks of, quote, bot normally handing boxes of paprika. Western media is taking that to mean bell peppers, seeing as it's a produce sorting facility, unquote. Wait, no, the quote's weird here. Okay, editors, you suck. An official at the complex told reporters the accident occurred after a change to the plant's workflow to make the robot more efficient, requiring the aforementioned testing, and called for better safety measures to be established. The slain technician worked for the manufacturer of the robot. This is hardly the first incident of an autonomous system harming a human. Last month, an empty self-driving cruise robo-taxi hit and then proceeded to drag and trap, a woman who had seconds earlier been struck by a human hit-and-run driver and fallen in the way of the autonomous vehicle. The incident left the woman in critical condition and cruise's operations in limbo amid investigation by the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration. As the Register reported Wednesday, Cruise issued an update to its self-driving taxis to prevent similar incidents.
Don't hit people. That should have been there in the beginning.
I mean, I love that. I don't know what to say to that.
We need to update our taxis, not to hit people.
Well, it just never was taught to identify somebody laying in the road or flying through the air as a human. So.
Okay, I could understand that. I mean, we generally don't fly, and from what I understand, only very few individuals fall asleep in the road regularly.
Beyond agricultural, industrial, and transportation industries, data centers are looking into robots to address personnel shortages. Last month, Microsoft listed an opening for a hardware automation team manager to oversee, among other things, the use of robotic systems throughout its network of data centers. The opening was listed after an outage at a Microsoft facility in Australia, where the tech behemoth admitted it was exasperated by a shortage of staff on site. You could, you know, pay people. Anyways, Oracle has been trialing robotic systems, including the Boston Dynamics four-legged robo-dogs. Meanwhile, OCP Summit in October, Meta and JTEC demoed a robotic server cart capable of carrying entire data center racks, weighing 1,500 kilograms around. However, the system is still awaiting final safety tests. And I tell you what, I've been in data centers. No word of a lie, I've seen a guy brained by a server, basically. He thought it was screwed in. It wasn't. It was up in the higher end of the rack. Thing basically came forward and hit him in the back of the head, and they had to take him to the hospital. He was okay, but it did knock him out. So,
oh yeah, I could see that even cracking his skull.
Those things, okay, your average computer server, you know, think about how heavy your tower computer is, especially if you've got it loaded down with hard drives. Realize a server, since everything's redundant and it's made out of, you know, higher grade materials, probably weighs three times as much. And I have been in a data center before where we figured out whoever had racked those boxes did not have enough screws. So they instead only screwed in every other server and then just used the server that was screwed in as a shelf to hold the server above it. I refused to work on that rack. I said it was not safe. And I had some people making fun of me for that. And I'm like, fuck no. It's like, I'm not doing it. I'm not touching those boxes that are like that. And they said, well, why? And then I, same story about the guy I saw get hit with a server. It's like, no, I'm not doing it.
But they're already kind of on racks. I mean, if you only have half the screws, I usually call for what, four? Two at the top, two at the bottom. Put one at the top left-hand corner, one at the bottom right-hand corner, and then the next one up. That way they're all physically secured to the rack.
So most of these are what's called what you call a pizza box server. So they're not screwed directly in, you know, it's not, they're on what's called rails. So pretty much the rails attached to the side of the case, and that varies by manufacturer. And then the rails are what's actually screwed into the rack. And the rails are set up such that you can pull the server out of the rack without disconnecting it from the hardware.
So it pulls out, this is even worse. And the rails are on rollers.
Yes, they pull out like drawers. Now, they do have little screws you can use to lock them into the front of the rack, so that the servers don't pull out unless you need to work on them. But the idea is that way you can pull the server out of the rack, open the top of the case, you know, do whatever it is you got to do to the box to fix it, and then put it back in. However, if you have these rails in, and then you have the server being used as a shelf, and they're not all screwed in, they're just sitting there, you tell me what's likely to happen.
This is even less safe than I was initially imagining. Okay.
Yeah, I refuse to touch them. Because it's like, nope. Because one of three things is going to happen. Either one, nothing will happen, then you'll be expected to do it again. Two, one of these servers is going to fall when you go to work on one because you either don't realize it's being used as a shelf or that it's not on fucking racks. That's the thing. The ones that weren't screwed in, they weren't on rails either. They were just sitting on the server below it. So if you go try to slide it out, I mean, at worst, you're going to drop the thing on the floor. But because it's not connected to anything, it's just sitting there, right? And if you don't realize that in time, and they're heavy, and two, those data center floors are usually a raised floor, so there's a good chance the server is going to go through the floor. And that's assuming your foot's not in the way.
Oh, all the nice cords are going to be unplugged from the back of it and broken.
So, I know I'm getting way off topic from the robot killing a man here, but just, you know, I'm dead serious about data centers, man. If people think, oh, it's an IT job, that's no, dude. You're moving heavy equipment around. You're putting it up high, especially in, you know, some of these racks are 8 feet tall. So, you know, you're putting heavy equipment up high on drawer slides, basically. And if the person before you didn't hook it up right, you know, I don't want a 200-pound box dropped on my head. I don't know about you guys.
I'm good.
So.
And the calibration on the robot, speaking of the story.
Mm-hmm.
I am one of those apes that had to manually move boxes of fruit and vegetables. Anything capable of crushing a human would obliterate a box of peppers or a box of tomatoes or a box of cucumbers. This thing wasn't even properly calibrated to move the shit it's supposed to be moving.
It does kind of seem overkill on the spec, doesn't it? If you can crush a man's face. I mean, bad enough to kill him.
I understand the ability to lift large amounts, because a box of bananas is 40 pounds. Potatoes come in 10-pound bags, of potatoes come in 50-pound bags. So it's going to be lifting a lot, but each one of those boxes, except for the potatoes, a human could easily crush if they, well, not easy, but a human could crush. And if this thing's able to crush a human, it's got way too much torque for lifting bell peppers and tomatoes. I just want to say that.
That's what they were there to calibrate it, weren't they?
Yeah, they got worked for the company that made the robot. Yeah. He was trying to fix the sensors. So, This is where you have to ask the question, Robot Uprising or just bad code?
And overbuilt for the job. This thing has to have been built for multiple purposes on what all boxes it can carry.
I imagine that's what a lot of these robots are. Is they're probably a general purpose robot armature, right? And then you have different tooling you could attach to it, and that would be the gripper, or, you know, like in the case of automotive, you might have a welder, or you would have, you know, any other number of tools that you might put on there, drill, whatever, right? So they're a lot of industrial robots, at least from my understanding of them, they're custom orders, but they're kind of made from standard parts. So it's maybe not Legos, but Erector Set might be a way to compare it, you know?
Yeah, because I'm just thinking this robot's brother is the one that's moving cases of automotive batteries somewhere.
So,
or you need that type of grip strength to prevent the box from falling through your fingers.
And are you say it was you were telling me earlier you had found the same story, but it was more that the guy fell into the robot, not that the robot grabbed him.
Yeah, that's the original story I read, because the headline was sensational. Man killed by robot. And I'm like, oh, check this out. And then I was like, man doing maintenance fell between two machines and was crushed. So,
yeah.
I don't know.
I don't guess they do lockout tag out there either. Because those machines should not have had power.
Yeah, they shouldn't have. It's an interesting story anyway.
Well,
I mean, it's just another, it's just, the headline should have read, man dies industrial accident.
Yeah, that's true.
And that happens every fucking day on building sites, shipping yards, you know, men die every day doing this, the work they're paid for. No job is 100% safe.
Oh, I know. I've worked ways around safety measures on lots of industrial equipment just because it was easier. It was the easiest way to fix it.
So how'd you get
that? Encourage them.
That I would ever do that.
So how'd you get this done so quickly and under budget? Well, mostly OSHA violations.
Yeah. I'm a professional OSHA violator.
How did you fix Bob's fuck up? Well, I know that if I stick a quarter over the sensor, it thinks the door shut. So even though it's not shut, it allows me to move this hydraulic press while there's a human inside.
Hey, where's Bob? Oh, he's over there screaming. It cut his hand off.
I told him not to put his hand there until I said okay. I never said okay. Bob fucking retarded.
No, what's the forklift video? Klaus? I'm thinking of that guy now where he's trying to fix the forklift and he goes to start it with the guy's hand still in the motor.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Great one.
Yeah, that's a video always worth watching. The German forklift training video. Because it ends with them driving off into the sunset, the forklift being driven by the headless body of Klaus with two other factory workers impaled on the forks, screaming. This is an industrial training video. I was like... Next article is from Yahoo Finance. So finance.yahoo.com. After years of inflation, Americans are used to sticker shock, but nothing compares to the surging price of streaming video. Last week, Apple TV became the latest streaming service to raise its price up from $6.99 to $9.99 per month, following the example of Disney+, Hulu, ESPN+, and Netflix all hiked their prices in October. Half of the major streaming platforms in the U.S. now charge a monthly fee that's double the price they charged when they initially came to market, and many of these streaming services haven't even been around 10 years. Consumers have grumbled, but thus far has been willing to keep paying up. It's hard to say whether their breaking point will be, but given that analysts believe that the platforms are likely to continue raising prices even further, we'll probably find out soon enough. Quote, look what Netflix continues to do, unquote. I feel like that must be a typo. Moffin Nathanson analyst Robert Fishman told Fortune, according to... told Fortune, referencing the company's continued price increases despite record profits for more than a decade. Quote, I don't think there will ever necessarily be an endpoint, unquote. So they've got a chart here showing all the services hiking their prices. ESPN Plus is up 120%. Apple TV, that's growth since inception, 120%. Average annual price percent increase, 25%. So but basically, they've got this chart here showing that all of them except for Peacock, Paramount Plus, and Max have been growing, you know, a lot, and yet they're still hiking their prices, even though they're growing.
And Hulu, Disney, and ESPN, that's the same company.
So the point of the article, though, is that we don't know where this stuff's going to settle out, and that people are just willing to pay this stuff. And so you're going to keep seeing these, because they're not seeing mass exodus of people for these price hikes. They're just going to keep doing it. And, I mean, I know I've unsubscribed to a lot of stuff, mainly because I just wasn't watching it. But, you know, too, a lot of these services, if there's only one show I'm really interested in, or one or two shows I'm really interested in, or two shows I'm interested in, they're on different services. Yo-ho.
One thing I think that's also cushioning people, I don't pay for Apple TV or Netflix, even though I have a subscription to both of them. They're covered in my cell phone bill. So even though they've raised their rates, my bill's locked in for another year.
Well, that's pretty good, Madman.
And that's the way a lot of people are. Like if you have, I think, AT&T has a special plan with a couple of these streaming providers. T-Mobile does. So a lot of people, they're not paying the sticker price directly anymore.
Well, I think some of it was, I know mine, they offered demos for stuff. Like I could get like Apple stuff for like 3 months for free the last time I changed phones. But it was only for a couple of months. It wasn't part of the plan. Although I haven't really looked at my plan in a long time. So,
yeah, the whole reason I have Apple TV is it's part of my plan.
But can you only watch it on your phone, or can you still use it on?
Oh, I watch it on my TV. Okay. I've never watched Apple on my phone.
I was going to say, I didn't think you had an iPhone. So,
yeah, I'm watching it on my Roku.
Okay.
And in the phone that's on my plan, it's an Android. I can watch Apple TV on my Android. I kind of want to do that now just because I find it funny watching Apple on an Android.
Oh, Google's got some lawsuit. They're trying to get Apple to open up a lot of their services to be competitive. So you might see that more often. I know they're definitely trying to do it with iMessage, trying to get Apple to open up on that. So that might.
The one thing that I thought would affect the streaming services is the crackdown on the password sharing.
It hurt Netflix, but not nearly as much as people thought it would. And apparently a lot of people went ahead and just got their own plans.
And
I don't understand why, though, because Netflix used to, I mean, it used to be you got Netflix because they had flipping everything. But they don't anymore. They've had so much of their stuff pulled.
So, yeah, because a lot of the other companies decided to start opening their own streaming.
Yeah.
And I figured one way Netflix users would get around that is backing on the DVD plan, but now Netflix is just getting rid of their DVDs.
Yeah, I don't know. So, yo-ho, I guess. I've not really investigated setting up a Sickbeard server before, but now I'm interested. For anybody who knows what Sickbeard is, you get the joke. Everybody else? Well, you got something to Google. Couchbase is the database, isn't it? Sickbeard, is that maybe Sickbeard's just music. No, Sickbeard is the video. Yeah, okay.
I looking at these price increases, I think a big chunk of this is Disney trying to offset their losses at their theme parks and their and the movie theaters.
Well, that very well could be, since the streaming services are probably their most lucrative thing right now.
Because other than Apple TV, the big ups are with Disney companies. ESPN is owned by Disney. Disney Plus is owned by Disney. Hulu is owned by Disney.
Oh, yeah, they just bought out Fox's stake in Hulu, didn't they?
No, they bought Fox. Spectrum, I think, is the other company that had a stake in it. It's one of the cable companies, either Comcast or Spectrum. But how are they Disney's not... an 80% owner of Hulu.
How have they not been going after Disney for antitrust since they own almost all the media companies these days? Oh, right. They give the money, the government shit tons of money.
They give the government shit tons of money. And as far as the streaming, I don't know if they had enough of the market for them to be considered a monopoly. Because when they first got into streaming, they went with Hulu, but they partnered with several other companies. And then Hulu's just been buying out their shares or buying the company. In the case of Fox, instead of buying out their shares of Hulu, they just bought Fox.
Hmm. Well. Yeah. See what happens, I guess. Again, yo-ho. Next article is from ArsTechnica.com. Internet providers say the FCC should not investigate broadband prices.
Yes, they should.
Did I even need to read the article with that headline?
It's a natural monopoly. If we're going to have any type of regulatory agency, that's the one thing that the regulatory agency should be looking into, are natural monopolies. Well, I don't get to pick who the cable company around here is, so that's the one company in my area that I know the government should be monitoring.
You see, I'm pretty much right there with you on that. It's like, yeah, they've got all, you know, they're not competing with anybody. So, but of course they're telling the FCC to leave them alone. So, internet service providers and their lobby groups are fighting a U.S. plan to prohibit discrimination in access to broadband services. In particular, ISPs want the Federal Communications Commission to drop the plan's proposal to require that prices charged to consumers be non-discriminatory. Now, it's a little weird to me that they're taking the discrimination angle, because the monopoly angle is so much easier to explain, because I don't think the cable company knows who the hell I am other than a name on a bill, you know, let alone any way of discriminating against me, you know?
Yeah, I don't see discrimination as the problem. I see across the board price gouging is the problem. They're not price gouging anyone because they're black. They're price gouging people because they can price gouge people.
Yeah.
And they're price gouging everyone.
I mean, they don't care if you're Chinese. Assholes.
Yeah, and kudos to them for that. But when we're looking into this, I don't want them looking in for equity. I don't want them looking in for racism. I don't want them looking in for shit. I want them to look, what's the price structure? What's their cost? And here's the one problem I'm having with how are we going to regulate this is, what do we consider a fair profit margin? And if they're over that profit margin, whack them in the head. If they're under that profit margin, great, I'm getting a discount.
I'm just thinking in terms of the South Park episode where it's, you know, oh, you have a problem with your cable service? And then they flip open the nipple flaps.
Yep.
Yeah, I mean, I've got, for what I use, I'm in one of the better markets because I've got several internet providers. But if I wanted actual television, I've got one cable company and my choice of two satellite providers. I mean, it's three people, but that's still something that you could very easily collude on prices with, and I think they do.
Oh, and you know they do. In 2021, Congress required the Federal Communications Commission to issue rules, quote, preventing digital discrimination on access based on income level, race, ethnicity, color, religion, or national origin, unquote, within 2 years. FCC Chairwoman Jessica Rosenworcel, there's a name.
Imagine my shock on that one.
Last month, released her draft plan to comply with the congressional mandate and scheduled a November 15th commission vote on adopting final rules. The plan is likely to pass on party line vote as Rosenworcel has a 3-2 Democratic majority, but aspects of the draft could be changed before the vote. Next week's meeting could be a contentious one, judging by a statement issued Monday by Republican Commissioner Brendan Carr. So this gets into politics, but basically all of the ISPs are saying, don't investigate our prices, leave us alone. They're paying a lot of money to their lobbyists to, they're all opposing the FCC plan because, whereas I think it would be fairly hard to prove discrimination based on, I mean, maybe they are doing it and I just don't know it. And if they are, shame on them. But, there's so little competition in these spaces. I think Madman's got it right. You need to be looking at these guys anyways because they are granted monopoly, usually by a municipality of an area. And when they're not granted monopoly by a municipality, they tend to try to sue that municipality until they get the monopoly. I think it was Chattanooga that did the fiber internet through the city. And they've been sued like every year by different ISPs for competitive practices, just trying to get them to shut that down to force you onto AT&T or whatever. And you know what? From the ISP standpoint, I get it. I understand why they're trying to sue. And it's because they literally have nowhere left to grow. And the way our stock market works, if you can't grow every year, you're failing. So, but these things are monopolies. They literally have a saturated market. So there's nowhere left to get new customers. So, I mean, I understand why they're such dicks about it, but they're still being dicks about it. So...
But I'm also worried about the discussion of discrimination based on income level. How are you showing that?
I've got problems with that, but I'm not surprised that they're all requesting the FCC not to look into how they do their pricing. But I think you're right on that, you know, these things are natural monopolies. Their pricing should be looked into because, like you said, you don't have a choice of who you're doing business with these guys. You know, if you want internet access, 9 times out of 10, you don't get a choice. You're doing business with these people and they're dicks. You know, we referenced the South Park episode because it's accurate. And, you know, when South Park can make an episode about every cable company and it's as spot on as it is, that should tell you something's up, you know?
Yeah. I'm just seeing the government fucking this up by just not going in and doing a legitimate audit. I see them going in and trying to wokeify this for some fucking reason.
Yep.
And I hope that's not the case. I'm hoping the FCC just does its fucking job and hopefully we're better for it.
That reminds me, I've got to go file a comment on the FCC's website later because they're fucking with the ham bands again. So, how do you start feeling like an old man commenting about the FCC and the ham bands? Anyways, you know what?
Looking at their price structure, what do you think a decent profit margin is?
If you... a decent profit margin.
Yeah.
10 to 15% over operating cost, I think would be fair.
Okay.
I mean, I'm picking a number out of my ass, but that seems like a good number. So you take operating costs, right? You have the equipment, you have the maintenance on the equipment, you have the employees, you have the support. So you have your infrastructure, you have your maintenance, you have your payroll, right? Yep. That's all cost. Cool. You then tack 10 to 15% onto that to cover growth and to cover unexpected expenses. You know, and that's your monthly run rate to what you charge your customers. That way you're not overcharging your customers because, again, I mean, if you have... Because, again, so most utilities can't change their prices without going through their local government board because it's usually a government service.
That, and they're also granted the same thing that these have. That's a monopoly.
Right. So why on earth does the cable company not have to? I mean, granted, there is a bit of a difference in, you know, drinking water and plumbing and electricity versus what's most likely viewed as mostly entertainment with regards to a cable company. But data services are getting to the point they're pretty much required for modern employment. I mean, not always, but I couldn't do my job without internet service at home. Like, I could not do my job.
Be required to go to the office.
Well, but I often have to connect to stuff after hours or when I'm not in the office, and it would either be driving into the office every time there's something happening and being forced to stay there all night, basically. It would be very impractical to not have home internet for my role, my job. Not impossible, but very impractical. So, now, could I get away with just a cell service? Maybe. I knew some network engineers that did that. They lived out in the country, and all they had was cell service. But it meant when things were happening after hours and their service was being spotty, we didn't know when they were going to drop out, and it was a problem. So... you could make a pretty good argument that modern employment, you basically need to have the data services, you know, but I'm sure most governments are looking at this as entertainment. They're seeing it as cable TV, entertainment services, and not information, not employment, just, you know. You know, who cares if you have to pay an extra $10 a month to watch TV, right? I'm certain that's the way a lot of these things are looked at, which is why they let them get away with the pricing they do. So, I don't know. Anyways, let's do this last article here, because what I have for Dojo is just going to be quick. And I just saw the clock. This is from securityweek.com. Okta hack blamed on employee using personal Google account on a company laptop. Now, I could talk about this all day, but you guys would be bored to tears. So, Okta is blaming the recent hack of its support system on an employee who logged into a personal Google account on a company-managed laptop, exposing credentials that led to the theft of data from multiple Okta customers. So, I do want to read this because... it is not just that the guy logged into his Google account from a work machine. A brief postmortem from the Okta security chief David Bradbury said the internal lapse was, quote, the most likely avenue, unquote, for the breach that is ensnared hundreds of Okta customers, including cybersecurity companies BeyondTrust and Cloudflare. Quote, we can confirm that from September 28th, 2023 to October 17th, 2023, a threat actor gained unauthorized access to files inside Okta's customer support system associated with 134 Okta customers, or less than 1%. Some of these files were HAR files that contained session tokens, which could be in turn used for session hijacking attacks, unquote, Bradbury said in a note that contained the detailed timeline of the incident. He said the threat actor was able to use these session tokens to hijack the legitimate Okta sessions of 5 customers. Bradbury said the hackers leveraged a service account stored in the system itself that was granted permission to view and update customer support cases. So, Madman, you and I talked about this previously, where you got really upset that I was, when I was explaining that service accounts often don't have the same restrictions on them as user accounts do.
Oh, yeah, the whole I have to do whatever to, yeah, I remember that.
So the reason for that is a lot of times your end users are hooked into something like an Active Directory or, you know, any other online, you know, identity management store. But it's 9 times out of 10 for companies, it's Active Directory. And you can put all these rules on what accounts have to do, you know, how often they have to change the password, how complex they have to be, special characters, all that stuff. Service accounts, on the other hand, 9 times out of 10 are just local accounts on whatever server is running that application.
123 Bob.
Bob 123 is a password. I used to have a whole list of really good ones that you would just try on every system. You know, QWERTY, QWERTY UOPT, 1234, admin 123, root 123, TOOR 123, let me in, password. And of course, you know, the classics, love, sex, God, and password. So, but, yeah, so they got into a service account. Quote, during our investigation into the suspicious use of this account, I have been drinking, Okta Security identifies that an employee had signed into their personal Google profile on the Chrome browser in their Okta managed laptop. This is the important part. The username and password of the service account had been saved into the employee's personal Google account. Unquote, he said. And there it is, ladies and gentlemen. You want to know why on your company machines they block you from logging into personal accounts? Because shit like that. I could go on about this all day. We could read the article and pick it apart. Ain't gonna, one, because it's already 10:04. But two, you know, Mad Bannon and Ari would be bored to tears listening to me rant about this. But when they say you're not allowed to log into your personal accounts on your work machine, this is why. Because getting that service account, that guy was using it for something. The article goes on about how they initially couldn't, you know, were reporting the thing, and it's because they figured out they were looking at the wrong logs. And that's just knowing your systems. That's not a failure here. But literally, somebody logged into their Google account to sync their Chrome browser with their Google account, because that's a thing. I've never understood why I should use an account with a browser. I don't do that. Yeah, I get the whole idea of sharing or, you know, syncing your browser across devices. I think that's kind of dumb. I don't do that. But maybe it's
I find it more interesting not to do that.
So, yeah, but also, too, this service account, you know, was somebody accessing this remotely? Must have been. Does Okta not block offsite access? Are they not requiring VPN? Are they not requiring MFA? Actually, if it's a service account, it's probably not. Most service accounts, they don't require MFA because it's you end up either having to pass a little key fob around or everybody has to call the one guy who's got it on his phone for the MFA for that one. So that tends to turn into a management, you know, into just a logistics nightmare for doing multi-factor.
I have to do multi-factor and log in to the work VPN if I'm working remotely from anywhere.
Don't you love how the IT guys require you to do all this shit, but they won't do it to themselves?
Yeah! I have to have a company program on my phone to generate a key for multi-factor so that I can work remotely. And I have to log into their server before I can do anything to VPN. And that part I understand. They want to make sure that they control the network, fine. But if I have to do this shit, shouldn't everyone have to do this shit?
Yes.
Because if I fuck up, that's one department that might be minorly compromised. And the reason I say minorly is almost everything I touch is public record. Other departments, almost everything they touch isn't. And if you're IT, you're handling every department. So the shit you're touching, even if you're not touching company records, you're just doing maintenance on the system, that system is touching company records, and it could be confidential.
Well, I look at it like this. I have an account right now for one of the company accounts. Well, let's just say if I was having a really bad day and decided I wanted to cause a headache, just go post that username, password on 4chan and watch the fireworks. Because somebody would figure out it's real and start using it, right? So I've got those kinds of accounts. We don't do that with them because one, that's how you ensure you never get a job again. But two, that's how you ensure that company goes out of business. But I will admit there have been times where you're having arguments with people who don't want to, they want to set the bad passwords. They want to use the personal accounts. They want to do all this stuff where it's like, I could make a point by just letting a username, letting this username and password leak out on the internet and seeing what happens.
I always wanted to sync my iCloud account to my work PC.
I mean, we don't do it because of all the obvious reasons we don't do it, but...
Oh, come on, everyone wants to hear some Pink Floyd on occasion.
I mean, you fantasize, right? So it's like, man, I could fuck all you guys over and you never even know what happened. Damn morals. Why'd my parents have to raise me with morals? Do you know how much fun I could be having right now? So... Anyways, are you? You've been quiet. Do you have anything?
No, just been listening. I haven't had much to add tonight. Madman's been nailing everything I wanted to say, so I'm good.
What I have for you tonight for Digital Dojo is not really much in the way of a security tool or learning your computer or anything relevant, really, but it's hilarious. It's a little web game called Antidepressant or Token. Can you guess if a word is the name of an antidepressant drug or a Tolkien character?
Oh.
I did really bad at it. I was doing good at first, but in the end I got like 14 out of the 24 or whatever it is, right?
Like porn star meteorologist.
I mean, yeah, that's in the same vein, but I didn't know that one was a thing. Porn star meteorologist.
Yes, it's a thing.
Oh, fuck, that's all I've got for tonight. Listen to the stream. We're always working on it. Pure tech, porn star or meteorologist. Madman, closing thoughts.
I think I can't top porn star meteorologist at this point. I'm good.
Are you closing thoughts?
Well, I was thinking, Thanksgiving's coming up. Everybody's going to be jumping on aircraft this Thanksgiving. And I'd just like to leave you with this little statistic. Last month, there were 46 incredibly close calls with American Airlines. One airline had to make an emergency 700 feet climb to avoid a head-on impact. Just don't let that worry you over the holidays. 47, that's more than one a day. So you can do your own math on the odds.
Well,
happy traveling.
Considering the airlines have been, for years, having problems, hiring enough pilots, wonder if they finally just gave up and started lowering the standards.
That's got to nail it right on the head, Mops.
Thank you for your continuing patience during this transitional zombie apocalypse. Your satisfaction is very important to us.
Man, I'm sorry about this. I hope this doesn't ruin your day.